Today is December 20th, 2012. We're here in honor of Eugene's 150th birthday. I am Janet Jacobson and my husband, John Jacobson. We would like to tell you the story of how the Obsidian started in Eugene 85 years ago. The impetus was that on September 5th, 1927, two young U of O students were lost up in the mountains. They just weren't prepared for stormy conditions. I think it was Labor Day weekend, and they were lost. About 200 men and some women from Eugene, Portland, Bend, Hood River, and the Dalles gathered at Frog Camp to search for them. And it involved a 10-day search. The two boys had signed in at Middle Sister in the Summit box, or some kind of a register box that was there. And they knew they should have been coming down to their base camp at Frog Camp. But John, where did they found them a year later?
They eventually found them a year later over on the Chambers Lake side.
So they were really lost. In the tents at Frog Camp, the Eugene men that were there decided that they wanted to organize an outdoor club that could handle search and rescue efforts. So the preliminary meeting was in the Chamber of Commerce rooms. That was on September 21st, just 2 weeks later. And John, tell us about what happened at that meeting.
Well, they decided that it would be a good idea to have an outdoor club, and they're trying to sort out some of the preliminaries. And it was interesting. There was several fraternity brothers that were there, and there was discussion of whether women should be allowed in the club or not. And the fraternity brothers really thought it needed to be a he-man organization. And basically, they were sent packing, and several of our charter members were women, and women have been an important part of our club ever since.
So by November 3rd, they had organized a club called the Eugene Outdoor Club. They knew that if you joined at this time, that you would be a charter member. So they waited a few weeks to make sure they had all the charter members that they needed. And on November 17th, they met, and all those people that met were the charter members. And John Bovard was elected the president. He had been a member of the Mazamas, and so they felt he had some experience on how to run an outdoor club. The Mazama is an outdoor club that's in Portland. So John Bovard was associated with the U of O, like the dean of the recreational or athletic department, so was well qualified for this. Some of the charter members included Ray Sims, Florence Ogden, who went on to climb three mountains in one day, Nelson McDuff, Prince Glaze, Dot Dotson, Dr. Osborne, and Ed Thurston, some well-known names in the Eugene area. By December, they had their first walk, and they went to the Braes, which is where a TV station?
I think it's Blanton Heights now where the TV towers are.
So that was their first walk. And they quickly became involved in search and rescue. There were two references to search and rescue efforts that they dealt with, and they were much more organized. They were very pleased with the club. And by this time, I think they had about 100 members. So January 1st, 1928, they had their first New Year's outing at McKinsey Bridge. So, John, do you know anything about that area where they were?
No, I don't. I believe it was in the area of where the ranger station is now. Later on, they actually had a clubhouse there in the CCC camp that was there later. But that was sometime later.
Well, we know that 34 attended, and 19 went on a large bus chartered for the trip. And they quickly learned how to have a good time. The pictures of them, the trip reports, are they love their winter sports and their New Year's outings. Not only did they have winter outings where they stayed in cabins, they had a summer outing. Now, this would have been this was not uncommon for outdoor clubs in the Northwest to have a summer outing. So the Obsidians were right on target and now they weren't the Obsidians yet.
They were the Eugene
Outdoor Club. The Register Guard, or whatever the newspaper was called at that time, said that was not a very spiffy name. I don't think the paper used the word spiffy, but they thought they could have a unique name. So the club had been, members had been tossing around another name. At that summer camp, August 5th to the 12th in 1928, it was a two-week outing, and it was called Camp Boulevard after the president. On Monday, 18 members climbed the Husband, and then on Tuesday, 7 people climbed the North Sister, and then 10 climbed the Middle Sister. And then they had a day of rest, and then they set out early Friday and climbed the South Sister. They crossed those fields of jet-black obsidian, and Henry Korn, who's a well-known person in Eugene at the time, conceived the idea that he said, we're as hard as rocks, these rocks as we're walking on. So why don't we call ourselves the Obsidians? And the name was changed from the Eugene Outdoor Club to the Obsidians. And I think at that time, 3 women climbed the North Sister, Florence Ogden and Elsie McCose, who later became Elsie Dotson. Dotson's wife. So that's the first summer outing. Also at that time, Ray Sims started climbing the North Sister, which he did every year for over 30 years. What's interesting is 2 weeks later after summer camp, the Obsidians took 73 townspeople on a sightseeing tour of the Collier Glacier. There's pictures of all these people in a line on how they got up there there's a long hike in to see the Collier Glacier. Who would have known that all these pictures that Ray Sims took every year and that another woman took would end up revealing the history of this shrinking Collier Glacier. So, John, you know anything about the Lewis Cabin that they started using?
Well, the Lewis Cabin was over on the old McKenzie Highway at Lost Creek. And they rented that for several years. I don't recall how many.
10.
For 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And had lots of parties up there and did a lot of winter activities above there up the Hand Lake. They actually had a portable ski tow that they took up to Hand Lake where they used for skiing. So there was a lot of winter activities out of there. And, of course, the usual summer hikes and that sort of thing and mountain climbs.
There are a lot of pictures of the group of the skiers at Hand Lake. They really were into skiing and ski racing. And Dot Dotson took a lot of movies. You've seen some of those movies of their skiing?
Oh, yes. Well, they've been shown at the lodge, and we've got them in our archives, the movies that Dot took out of them. And his son,
Jim
Dotson, has converted them all to DVD for us. So we've got a nice record of some of the very early activities of the club.
The following summer, in 1929, their second summer outing, this is an amazing story because they had 40 campers, and the Morris Chevrolet Company took them in the Chevrolets over the McKenzie Pass along the Century Drive, where they met packers who took their baggage to a summer camp along the Hinton Creek south of the South Sister. And there are pictures of all these Chevrolets.
New Chevrolets
going over the McKenzie Pass to the Century Drive. I don't think that's the McKenzie Pass. I don't even know if it was paved in 1929.
I believe they came in, from Century Drive past Rock Mesa in that area. That's the way they came in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how they drove in there. Beats me.
They didn't have a clubhouse at that time, and they would have annual meetings every year, and they would be held in places downtown in Eugene. One of their annual meetings was held at the McMoran and Washburn Auditorium. They kept on skiing. They would have ski carnivals at Hand Lake, and then they would all ski up to the summit of McKenzie Pass. They would meet at their cabins in the wintertime and then ski from their cabins up to Ham Lake, and it would be a race. Dot Dotson took a lot of pictures of those activities, and then there were members who would hand paint the black and white photographers, and then they would have photo contest of who took the best pictures. And some of those photos are up in our lodge, hanging on the wall. by 1930, one of the charter members, Nelson McDuff, died mysteriously. And it was agreed that they would the Forest Service would take a plaque up to what was going to be called McDuff Mountain. You know that story, John? You don't? Well, they must have had to have gone 13 miles, and they went on. The Forest Service person had the plaque and the tools and the horse, and everyone else walked. And when he found out one of the members had huckleberry pie, he agreed to let the women ride for a bit on his horse. So they finally made it, and put the plaque up. But somehow on the maps, the McDuff Mountain on the map is on another mountain.
They got it. They got the plaque on the wrong mountain.
And finally, by 1993, with the Oregon geographic names and the Forest Service, the plaque was restored to its original place, which is McDuff Mountain. It's a long story. But he was a charter member. Then they had a summer outing in 1930 near Mount Jefferson. And, of course, you can't take enough food for 2 weeks. So Dot Dodson returned to Eugene the second week to get more food, meat and bread. He surprised everyone when he came back because he had a bride, Elsie. So that's an amazing story, how he didn't tell anyone he was going to get married on his way back to Eugene. She was a great climber and climbed all the Three Sisters. And we had a lot of couples in our club that we know about who met in the club and got married and climbed together. Let's see, their annual meeting in 1930 was at the Osborne Hotel. And they saw Dot Dodson's motion pictures from summer camp. And by this time, they now have 100 members. I'm going to just keep going. Then in 1931, they had their camp at the Green Lakes. And this is the largest one. And that's the day they did three in a day. The mayor of the town, Ed Johnson, Clifford Stalsberg, and Don Woods achieved that feat. They left camp at the Green Lakes, did the North Sister, then the Middle, and then the South, and came down the Lewis Glacier. No, they didn't take their sleeping bags up to the North Sister. They let Ray Sims collect them the next day when he climbed the North Sister. So what do you know about Cy Fulton, John?
Well, Cy Fulton was an artist in Eugene and a member of the Obsidians. And when we would go off to summer camp or our summer outings, at least the way I heard it, he preferred to paint rather than climb and hike. And did a lot of paintings, of which I think Janet's already mentioned that we have a couple of them at the lodge currently.
They had, after he died, the Obsidians helped his wife have an exhibit of his 100 paintings, which included a lot of outdoor landscapes at the Veterans Memorial Building. And then around 1936, Charles Bryan Ryan was really active in the club. He was a U of O student in the art department. There are pictures of him in a lot of the ski races. So, John, tell about the oil painting we found about Brian.
Well, several years ago, we did a renovation of the lodge, and during that renovation, we took the opportunity to clean things out, and we had several storage rooms, and Janet and Rick Ahrens, another Obsidian, were cleaning out one of the back rooms, and Janet came upon this this old hunk of canvas, and she said, well, this should go. Luckily, wiser heads prevailed and bothered to look at the other side of the canvas, and there was a painting, a kind of a CCC era painting like you'd see at Mount Hood. It was clearly of Obsidians. You could see the Obsidian patches on their shirts, and we have sort of feel that it was in the Sunshine Meadows area up on the Three Sisters. But anyway, it had been folded, which is not good for a large, I think, roughly 6 by 4.5 foot painting. Luckily, it was realized that it was a valuable painting, and it has been taken to Portland to a conservator in Portland who is restoring it for us. And hopefully, sometime in early 2013, we will have it back, get it framed, and put it in its proper place on the walls of the Obsidian Lodge. But it's a beautiful painting.
After World War II, became a professor of art at the university, and he was also in the 10th Mountain Division. And there are references to a lot of skiers that skied with the Obsidians who went on to be in that 10th Mountain Division in World War II. In the 1930s, the club was a very frugal club, and it was very hard for them to decide where to have a lodge. Most outdoor clubs in the Northwest had their lodges were buying property up in the mountains. They bought a lot at the corner of 17th and Oak, which is near Hirons, for $200. And that was where they thought they might build a lodge of some kind. In 1941, their summer outing was devoted to the study of Collier Glacier. And Ruth Hobson, who later married Keene, Ruth Hobson Keene, she and Ray Sims, as I mentioned before, have taken a lot of photos of Collier Glacier. And some of her photos are on the Portland State University Glacier website. They have been very valuable in studying the research. So she was a very interesting member of our club. So on to 1948. This is the Gretchen Fraser story. She won a gold medal for skiing, the first woman. And she was from Portland. And she was flown to Eugene to be honored, and I'm assuming at that time the airport was at 18th and Chambers. There's our pictures of her coming down from the plane and being greeted by members, important people in Eugene. So she was first taken to a luncheon at the Chamber of Commerce. Then they took her. The plans were take her. The Mackenzie River guides would take her on a boat trip down the river. Friday night, she would attend the annual Obsidian Spring Banquet at the Osborne Hotel, where the tickets were $2. And then she would be honored at the Mortar Board Ball at the university. Saturday, there'd be a breakfast hosted by the Obsidians. She was taken on a tour of the city. A ski club had a dinner. She was to be the honorary referee at the U of O football game. And on Sunday, she was to ski with the Obsidians. By that time, Gretchen Fraser was ordered by her doctor not to take so long a trip. I'm sure she was exhausted by this Sunday ski trip with the Obsidians. So they left at 4:30 in the morning, 8 or 10 carloads of skiers. They went to the Alder Springs on the Mackenzie Highway where there was 3 feet of snow. They had worked with the Highway Commission to get them to help clear the road, and the Highway Commission used a rotary plow in clearing the road for them so that they could entertain Gretchen. Then they skied up to the snow line at Frog Camp, and I think they got clear to Sunshine Shelter, and an airplane flew over and dropped some food for them. And the people on that trip were people like George Korn, Norm Lee, Mike Stahl, Brian Ryan, John Skillern, Jack Meisner, Bob Pfeiffer, Arlene and Ernie Kiesling, and Minor Hamlin. These are some of these people were in the 10th Mountain Division, really good skiers. We still didn't have a lodge, so where did they sign up for their trips? Do you know?
At the, what was the name of that hardware store?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a hardware store.
Store where they did all the signing up. Yeah, I don't
remember. They still wanted to have a larger, to get a lodge. And I think at some point they had sign-up sheets then at the Y for where you could go and sign up for trips. So by this time they have $4,500 in savings. And Tom, the architect, went with a group. They were looking for a lot. And so do you know about where they got their lot?
Well, it's actually very near the top of 30th Avenue, and where Spring crosses 30th Avenue at the top, but you can't get to the lot from there other than walking through the woods. It's up above the Laurelwood Golf Course, and they bought 4.5 acres there in the 1950s for, I don't recall, it was very reasonable.
About $4,500.
$4,500,
yeah. And 30th had not been built, so the access was by a dirt road. So they had to clear a road, and they had to clear the building site and the parking lot. And Tom Taylor was the name of the architect, who was a member. And they had $12,000 from selling that lot at 18th and Oak. And they used that to hire Vern Harding Construction Company to build whatever had they built, because the volunteers did a lot of the work.
That's right. I don't recall exactly what was hired, but a lot of the labor was volunteer, and even some of the materials were donated materials by the club.
Ray Cavanero, one of our oldest living presidents, said it was not their hands that did the clearing, but their backs. And they must have gotten a lot of poison oak in that effort. Now, the clubhouse was dedicated in 1963. Then we had two of our members went on a Mount McKinley climb and died. And there was another, their names are Mark McLaughlin and Jerry Clark, and another student at the U of O was on that climb, John Russell. They all died on this climb. Do you want to tell about the wall?
Well, there was a lot of discussion how a memorial could be created, and what was decided was to build a climbing wall, an entry area to the lodge with a climbing wall on the end, which they did, and that was done in, I think, around 1970, early 70s.
74 it was dedicated.
Okay.
Our club just keeps moving along, more members, we have a nice clubhouse. Then there was a leak.
In about 2004, there were some water stains in this entryway. In fact, right on the backside of the climbing wall on the inside of the lodge, and we tore off some of the materials on the inside, and there were most of the studs along the climbing wall were gone. They had completely rotted away. So a decision was made to replace the entryway. And at the same time, we decided to add some area to the lodge, make a bigger entry area.
So when we dedicated the lodge renovation, and I know that it cost $25,000 to keep the memorial wall, because now it's earthquake safe.
Suddenly we had to meet earthquake codes, which they didn't have to meet in the 70s to put it up. So there had to be significantly more work done than anticipated to keep it. But we kept it, and it's still there.
And what was really interesting at the open house was that of the two men who had died on Mount McKinley, Mark McLaughlin's brother came. It had never occurred to me to try to find the relatives of the people for whom the wall was dedicated. So I tried to find Jerry Clark, who was a U of O student. I did a lot of research and found his brother back in Indiana, who didn't even know that there was a climbing wall in honor of his brother. A nephew of Jerry's then came out the following summer to see which we now call the memorial wall. That was a really special event. Things move along. We have lots and lots of activities. We have a climbing school. We have climbs. There was one more addition to the lodge, which was the mural, Dallas Cole, which you helped with.
That's right. Dallas Cole is an Obsidian member. She's an artist, a sculptor. She also did the mural that's on the conference center adjoining the Hilton across from the Performing Arts Center. We were discussing art in the lodge one day, and I told Dallas, she had a painting in there, and I said, but your forte is sculpture. It'd be nice if we had a little sculpture of yours. And basically she said she didn't like to do little stuff, and she didn't think the walls could hold what she might like to do. And we had a retaining wall outside the lodge that was holding back the bank from the climbing wall that we talked about earlier. And she says, now that would be a nice place for a sculpture. And as it turned out, that's where we put a very nice ceramic mural of a couple hikers approaching a waterfall. And when was that dedicated? Do you know?
May 2010.
2010.
Yeah.
A great addition to the lodge and to our art scene.
So let's spend a little bit of time on our current activities, because one of the things that's really impresses me in our club is our climbs committee, who work with search and rescue and have a climbing school in the spring. About 20 people can sign up for the climbing school. They do mountaineering at the columns, the Skinner Butte columns, and then they do some avalanche training, and then they take people on a graduation climb of Diamond Peak.
Usually of Diamond Peak.
And our club members continue to be strong in the search and rescue effort, which is how we all got started. We still have summer outings. Want to talk about that, John?
Well, and we usually call them summer camps now, but we, the what's what of the Northwest is where we usually go for summer camp. We've been to the Wind Rivers of Wyoming and the Wallawas and the Sawtooths of Idaho is one of our favorite places. We tend to go back there a lot. We've been to the Olympics of Washington, the North Cascades, both the east side and the west side, Mount Lassen, the Ruby Mountains of Nevada. So we get around for summer camp.
And tell people what we take.
Well, no Chevy dealer hauls us anymore. We rent a Penske truck, and 24-foot Penske truck, and we usually fill it up pretty well with kitchen gear, stoves.
Showers.
And on and on and on.
And we hire two cooks to cook the food. That makes it a wonderful outing for all of us to hike every day. We also have hiking activities all year long. We have skiing. There are a couple of canoe trips in the fall. We have something called extended trips where we go for 2 or 3 days, and those could be like to Crater Lake or Palina Lake or up at the Manukan Lodge on the Columbia Gorge. All of our activities are led by volunteers, so whatever the volunteers say they want to do is what we do. We have a potluck every month with a program.
We have bus trips that mm-hmm. go to all sorts of interesting places.
Okay, and how about John telling them about the patch that you get when you're a member or you climb?
Well, when you join, that's the easiest patch to get. You get a patch of an obsidian arrowhead, and if you climb the Three Sisters, you get a patch with three little arrowheads on it, and if you climb all 10 peaks, the major Oregon peaks, you get the 10 Peak Award, which is an arrowhead patch with the number 10 on it. And though they have been around for a long time, more recently we've added trip patches for people that go on, I forget, 25, 50.
The trips are 100, 200, 300. It takes a long time to get 100 trips in for some people. And then the leaders get patches too. If you like patches, everyone wants to have patches to put on their pack.
And the most recent one that's been added to the group is for trail maintenance, which is something that we are active in Eugene.
Our club has adopted the Ridgeline Trail from Fox Hollow to Willamette, and that includes all the trails on top to Spencer Butte. And we work with the city once a month to work on those trails. And last winter, when we had all that storm damage, we were out. We had 5 outings out there. I learned what the word mucking means. We mucked those trails, and the city had the chainsaw, and it was a lot of work. But I think in about 2 weeks, we got the trails open for everybody. I would think, to me, our community involvement is an important part of our club. We're not just an outdoor club, a social club. We really try to give back to the community. One of the things I like to do is to lead the Ridgeline Trail frequently, so that people can hike the 6.2 miles using a car shuttle so they can see the wonderful trail that the trails that Eugene have, especially the Ridgeline Trail. We have a lot of hikes in town as well as out of town. John, the website.
www.obsidians.org.
You don't have to go to the Y anymore to sign up to go on a trip. We are in the social media. We have a Facebook. We have a photo gallery. Now leaders can post their photos online so you can see how much fun we have been having for the last 85 years. And it's clear we have a lot of fun in our club.
All approximately 500 members. And guests.
As always, our mission is to be part of the community and to introduce people to the out of doors and to take care of it. And we welcome anyone at our meetings and on our activities.